everyone. Welcome back to the Earthdawn Survival Guide, the podcast for all disciplines, paths, players, and game masters. With your questers, Josh and Dan. I am Dan.
I am Josh.
And on today's podcast, we will be discussing all things quizzical, because we're going to have an all-email edition, 2024, because this is the first episode of 2024 we're going to put up. So if you have any questions for us, please drop us a line at edsgpodcast@gmail.com. Yes, Josh, go.
It is the first episode of 2024 that we are recording.
Right.
Technically, the third part of our Lou Prosperi saga got posted today as we are recording this. So it was the first episode released. I am sort of dating that as the last episode of year four for our like archive sort of thingy, because it's all kind of part of one thing. I hope you all enjoyed that. We certainly enjoyed listening to it or recording it.
Is it like a Louagy, like a Lou trilogy? A Louagy? Yeah. I'm kidding.
But yeah, so this is Happy New Year. It was nice to have some weeks of not recording over the holidays.
Yeah, love you, Josh. Didn't miss you.
We still had work because we had to edit the Lou episodes.
Yeah.
Normally it's the two of us adding a third person into that.
So complicated.
Yeah, it makes things even a little bit more complicated. And then, by the time you hear this, it will be up, but I want to mention it now. If you are some sort of masochist, as of Friday, January 5th, on the Earthdawn Survival Guide podcast YouTube channel, the entire 2.5 hour recorded video session with Lou will be up on the YouTube channel.
So you can see all of us and all of our bad lighting.
Yeah. No edits, no truncations. It is the entire thing as it was recorded. The podcast, the audio podcast that you listen to, we like took out a lot of, not all of them, but many of the start and stop, started a sentence and then realized you wanted to put it a different way, or ums, or like talking over each other.
Yeah, the audio is polished there.
Yeah, there's a little bit of polish. I hate doing that with video, so I didn't.
And I frankly don't know how to, so haha.
Well, there's a thing where the idea is that roughly you can estimate, if you're doing it properly, an hour of recording and post-production work gets you like 10 minutes of finished audio.
Yeah, it's a 1-to-6 ratio.
Yeah, something like that. Video is like an entire order of magnitude above that.
Yeah.
It's good enough. Those YouTube video essayists and stuff who do video recordings, if they screw up, they go back and they like do another take.
Yeah.
I probably could have gone in and like trimmed and had like the video images sort of skipping and stuff as bits were cut out, but I didn't feel like doing that. Felt it a little like inauthentic. But on the plus side, as I was going through that, I put in chapter stops for all of the questions and related discussion things. So if you look at the information in the YouTube video, it will have links to where you can click and it'll jump to the beginning of that question, concept, idea stage.
See, and this is how we get to best podcast of the year.
Well, I think we need to submit things as well. But anyway,
I have something to submit.
Yeah. So that's available. Go ahead and take a look at that. One other thing that I want to mention here, again, as we record this, the pre-art draft Kickstarter backer release of Grand Bazaar was made available as a backer's update in that Kickstarter campaign.
January 2nd, yeah.
Yeah, last night, January 2nd. So keep an eye out for that. It is a link to the PDF as it stands right now, which is to say all of the text is in there. The majority of the formatting is done. We're waiting on art to be delivered. And so things are making progress. There is also in that same message a link to the typical error tracking, typo notes and stuff, Google Sheet that we set up. So if you do get that and take a look through and notice things, please let us know. Put them in that sheet and we will do our best to fix problems before printing. The final project is released.
Yeah.
Deeper Secrets is probably not too terribly far from having its backer release happen. That probably will not have happened by the time this episode drops, but it should be soon-ish. Fair. Trademark.
Absolutely.
Again, we don't do release dates, but as far as I'm aware, as of last night's meeting, I finally got the last bits of stuff that I needed to drop in. So it's just a matter of going in and doing that and doing a quick pass through and making sure that there isn't anything that I had forgotten to fix.
Fair. All right, then. That takes care of the last two Kickstarters.
Yay, progress. That means that things are moving along nicely. So that's where things stand.
Fair. I like it. Thank you for the updates. Any questions about anything you just heard, edsgpodcast@gmail.com. We will or will not answer them as we see fit.
Or better yet, go to the FASA Games Discord. That is a better place to get
immediate
more
feedback.
Information. Yeah, more immediate feedback. And there's a good community of folks there.
Yeah, instead of waiting 2 weeks for us to get around to it.
Right.
So, a lot faster. A lot faster. All right, on to our quizzical portion of the show. This one is a repeat. I think this is from Bart. Hey, John and Dash. Now, who did I mean to list first? Just thought to drop you a question in the wake of a very fun discussion I had on the FASA Discord. Speaking of, dispelling, disrupting, or unweaving threads, like those tied to thread items and group patterns. Can it be done at all, and how? Here are my thoughts. Does this say Displem magic talent? All right. Most likely a no, but maybe with a knack? Seems way overpowered.
He probably meant dispel magic.
I think so. I'm going to go with Displem, because that's how he put it there. So, haha, what did I mean to say? Or the disrupt magic horror power, dispel magic dragon power? Yeah, maybe. Only with a thread item or pattern item in hand? Or are threads meant to be impervious, period? Have at it.
Broadly speaking, there is not any name giver slash adept magic that can just disrupt, dispel, get rid of permanent threads. That is, threads woven to magic items or to other people, places, or things. These sort of permanent pattern magic threads that require legend points to spawn. It is theoretically possible that there could be unusual or unique horror powers that could temporarily dampen a threat effect. I don't know exactly how that would necessarily work. I'm not aware of anything that exists in any of the rulebooks that can do that. Probably would model it off of, I think there is a dragon-like suppress magic power, maybe along those lines. I'd have to look at, I haven't looked at those rules in a while, so I don't know specifically whether it would apply or not. And again, likewise, dragons could potentially have knowledge of strange magic that could do that sort of thing as well. I would be inclined to say that anything like that would be only able to temporarily suppress and maybe only by certain amounts the power of a thread. Really, if you want to get rid of a thread, the best way to do that is to get a hold of the thread item itself and then weave threads to it to replace the existing threads. Because thread items have a maximum number of threads that can be woven to them.
Yeah.
And if those slots are already full and you try and weave a thread to it, it replaces one of those existing threads.
Yeah.
That's sort of by default how that works. But generally speaking, they're not really intended to be something that is easily messed with. And in part because that is a resource that you invest into. Yeah. And so similar to talents, there may be things that can temporarily suppress it as a mechanical thing to cause problems in a particular story or adventure or encounter. But I wouldn't want to deprive player characters of things that they spent their resources on.
That makes sense.
That's my personal approach to things. Certainly wouldn't want to do that on any kind of major basis without discussing it with the players ahead of time. hey, this is a story arc or idea that I have, I want to deal with. I want to make sure it's okay with you before I go messing about with your character's stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. He follows up with, of course, anything is possible for the creative GM, but I wanted to pick your brains in regard to the existing rule set without resorting to GM narrates it so it happens. And for fun, mostly for fun. Cheers, yeah. And thanks for the awesome podcast, Bart. P.S. The name Mishmash was a genuine dyslexia hit. I just had to leave it as it turned out hilarious.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I think the discussion in the Discord kind of ended up in a very similar place, that there really wasn't a whole lot canon. I think the closest thing to it is the suppress magic power that, again, I think dragons get, but it doesn't specifically say anything about targeting threads. It could potentially reduce the effectiveness of powers or abilities or bonuses that you get from the threads. Like if the item provides you a bonus to a certain talent, I think suppress magic might provide reduction to your effective talent rank. And so that effect would maybe come into play. But again, that's without looking up the exact rules of the power to see what might happen.
Fair enough. Okay, the next one here is from Chris. Hi, fellas. He doesn't even bother with names anymore. I really enjoyed the podcast, and I'm very impressed with how long it's been running. As are we.
So are we, yes.
It makes my drive to work much more enjoyable, and I have learned a lot of things along the way, too. I have a couple of questions about weapons in the game, specifically crossbows.
Oh, God.
I have a comment on this one as well for you, Chris. Number one, why do you add strength step to crossbows when crossbows are mechanical in nature? I have house rules in my game that use static damage ranks for crossbows that are double what's listed in the book plus two steps. So a light crossbow does damage rank 10, no matter who's using it. Number two. Okay, let's just go with number one first.
Okay, so to go with number one, the reason why strength adds to crossbow damage is because that's how weapons work. Basically, that's the super simple answer. It's because that's how weapons work, is you add your strength step to the damage.
So that's how they work in Earthdawn, not necessarily real life.
Yeah, within the mechanical framework of the rules.
Gotcha.
I understand that from a quote unquote realism point of view, that crossbows, depending on your point of view, largely do not have that kind of effect the same way that a bow does, or that a sword does, where it is more muscle driven, but it's largely for just simplicity of mechanical systems and consistency. Adjusting that, if you decide you want to house rule yourself that they have a fixed damage step, however it is that you determine what that is, if you want to do that, that's fine. I've heard other people do that. The only thing that slightly bothers me about that is that because you no longer have strength as a factor in the weapon's damage step, how would a crossbow be affected by any kind of damage enhancing talent that replaces strength? Like, for example, flame arrow, where the flame arrow step replaces strength in the weapon damage calculation. Essentially, what going with fixed damage does is that it means you either need to come up with a way of recalculating what the damage would be for flame arrow from a crossbow, because you can certainly do it. You know, however you decide to do that, that would be my biggest concern, because there are things that interact with strength in terms of adept magical abilities.
Yeah.
And if you no longer have strength as part of the calculation for the weapon damage, then how are those going to work with it? Are you saying that the magic of an adept is not going to be able to interact with these because of that? That seems a little bit weird. But again, that is the concern and the thing that you would need to think about if you are going to go with that house rule.
Yeah, fair. I tweaked my own version of the crossbows as well. I did give them a static damage. It wasn't for a house rule. It was for something else Fossa was working on. It's not seen print. So I don't have any other comment than that.
Yeah, so that's not an Earthdawn thing.
No. But it was using Earthdawn's rules.
Right.
Mechanics built in. So I did that on purpose because it didn't have things like flame arrow to affect the damage step, so I could do that. So a little bit more amenable to the situation. However, not perfect. Understood. Number two, why isn't there a larger list of crossbows, like a hand crossbow, a heavy crossbow, and or a siege arbalest? Again, I've made those in my house rules, but it seems like a simple thing to officially add a bit of realism, fantasy game, I get it, and some variety and flavor. In my write-up, personally, Dan, over here, that's what I did, is I had like three or four different kinds of crossbows to include in the game. Hasn't seen print. Anyway, Josh.
Well, hand crossbows are generally not a thing at the technology level that Earthdawn is supposed to be at. I don't think.
Fair. Yeah, the little crossbow pistol thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a sort of, and I don't mean this in any kind of bad way, but that's sort of a D&Dism that crept into D&D later on, I think, like with the drow and things like that, yeah, the hand crossbows. Mm-hmm. Hand crossbows are freaking cool. I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3, and there is a disgusting, like, rogue ranger build where you dual-wield hand crossbows and do, like, ungodly amounts of damage with them. They're cool, especially when they're, like, both magical. And the first one you shoot sets people on fire, and then the other one is magical and does extra damage to people that are on fire.
Yeah.
All of that aside, they weren't in the original Earthdawn rulebook. Hand crossbows don't feel to me like an Earthdawn thing.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, whatever. Heavy crossbows, conceivably, I suppose you could make. I don't know what the rest of the stats would be, but I do know that the Elven Warbow is the missile weapon because it's got the most base damage out of all of the ranged weapons outside of thread stuff.
Yeah.
And so I could see the argument for having a heavy crossbow that has the same damage as the Elven Warbow. I don't know what the rest of the stats would be offhand, but I could see introducing that as a parody of the, you know, short bow, long bow, Elven Warbow, light, medium, heavy crossbows. Like, I could see that symmetry being desirable. As for an arbalest, look at the weapons that airships carry. I'm pretty sure in the Crystal Raiders book there is a bolt thrower, big ship mounted crossbow kind of thing.
Yeah, the Thunderbolt.
I'm pretty sure there is, although I don't know whether it has name giver scale stats or airship scale stats or whatever, but like those are a thing. They're just not at the scale that most people are going to be walking around with. The same way that like fire cannons, you don't have a fire cannon that a player character is going to be walking around with as a weapon.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Yeah. I swear Terror in the Skies, one of those airships had a ship sized crossbow on it, but I am probably remembering wrong.
No, I think you're right. I think so. We'll have to remember that when we
that page and coloring it in. So I remember there being on that page.
I'm going to say we will be reviewing Terror in the Skies here shortly.
Yes.
Maybe we can try and remember that when we get to that point and seeing what the armaments of the airships in that adventure are.
Absolutely. Chris does have a PS for me. He also lives in the Denver area. Would like to see an Earthdawn happening at the Wizard's Chest game store downtown. I remember the Wizard's Chest. My friend used to work there, and his ex-wife used to work there as well. So, yeah. I'll let you know if I can hit you up, Chris. There we go. But, yeah, Genghis Khan is happening in Aurora, Colorado, the second week, right after Valentine's Day in February. Here in Aurora, Colorado, there are no Earthdawn events. I've looked it up. So nobody's running anything that I know of.
Well, maybe you should.
I got time for that.
Speaking of conventions, actually two convention announcements coming up the weekend of January 13th and 14th.
Yeah.
In glorious Bangor, Maine, Stephen King country. My local area convention, SnowCon, is taking place.
Yes.
Obviously, this episode is going to drop like 2 days before it happens. So probably a little bit late notice, but if you are local to the area, feel free to come by, search for SnowCon, S-N-O-W-C-O-N, and the information will be available. It's a good little con.
Yeah.
I was checking the event sign up that just went live yesterday, and all of the events that I'm running are already sold out. There's not a lot that's up yet because it is a really short development cycle for this one, and so there may be events that are still to get added.
Fair.
But keep that in mind. It's always the weekend
It's the holiday weekend.
It's the Saturday and Sunday before the Martin Luther King holiday.
Gotcha.
Keep that in mind for the future. If you are sort of in the region, it's cool to come out for that. Also, FredoniaCon
is
coming up in February. So
I think
that's the 17th and 18th.
Yeah.
I think that's what the dates were that they said on the Discord and whatnot.
Yes.
That is a free online convention. It's the FASA convention that takes place on our Discord. There are games that are run online of Earthdawn, 1879. I'm sure they will probably try and do some Aetherstream stuff. And then there are also like panels and hangouts and Q&As and stuff like that that also happen during that weekend.
Yeah.
We have in the past traditionally done a live survival guide. We will look at possibly doing that again.
We'll discuss that further. Fair. All right.
We'll have to figure out the scheduling.
Totally. On to Brendan. Hi, Dan. Hi, Josh. When you guys covered the passions, you talked about how the mad passions transitioned from one set of core aspects to a different but related set of mad core aspects. As a thought experiment, could you give an example of what the other nine passions would stand for if they went mad? As a side note, I'm going to be starting an Earthdawn campaign for the group of players I've been running for D&D for since 2014. Wish me luck! Thanks for the wonderful podcast, Brendan.
Boy, I don't know that we will be able to do all of them, like all nine.
We could save all nine for like an entire podcast episode by itself.
Well, yeah. So like some of the ideas that immediately occurred to me, we kind of talked about it a little bit with Corollis, where Corollis could very easily be spun into greed and rampant unchecked capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
There are some aspects of that, wage slavery and things like that, that could be developed, you know, where you've got companies, merchant groups or whatever that are sort of pursuing profit at the expense of.
Yeah. Exploiting labor and things.
Yeah. At the expense of the proper functioning of society. There are some aspects of that actually that are already present within Trevar, where there are houses, there are folks that are still sort of in indentured servitude, continuing to pay off the debts that they incurred in order to survive the scourge.
Yeah.
So there is some aspect of that there. I could see Garlen being a overprotective mother figure.
Like helicopter parent?
Helicopter parent, like overly sheltering or smothering.
Yeah.
The family, or being,
I could see it
potentially, if you want to get darker, like even potentially kind of like abusive household, controlling, domineering.
Yeah.
I could see that potentially.
I could also see like Munchausen's by proxy.
Yeah. Some aspect of that. Estendar, you could very easily see stalkerish, obsessive behavior.
Yeah.
That comes about. Destructive artisan, like the idea of needing to suffer for your art.
Yeah.
The idea of the tormented artist, Edgar Allan Poe, frail Victorian boy situation, or the kind of things that you might see from the darker aspects of like Virginia Woolf.
Yeah.
I could see some of that out of Estendar. Thistonia seems really easy. Going out of the challenge and really going into the idea of bloodlust and war and battle, as opposed to the sort of valorous pushing yourself to the limits of your physical endurance, but changing it into like more dark, bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
More into the like blood lore moot aspect of.
I could see.
Of things.
Winning at all costs. There's no honor anymore. That's it. Subjugation of your enemy. Embarrassment, you subjugate them, you just absolutely, you defeat and kill. There's no point to it. It's just, like you said, bloodlust.
The sore loser kind of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of attitude. Who else have we got?
Locust.
Well, just read the essay in the Questor's book if you want to talk about
however that could go
Locust. The Lady of Chains.
Yeah.
Where you've got someone who is so wrapped up in the idea of defeating and converting slavers that they become almost a serial killer.
Yes.
I really love that essay, how it plays with expectations.
I know you do.
Let's see. Estendar, Garland, Corollis.
Florenius.
That's one that I have a hard time.
Yeah, because it's revelry, energy, victory, and motion. So I think like a sedentary.
Yeah, but then you've sort of got the sedentary laziness kind of is the deadening that is kind of put forward by Dis.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possible. Again, either you'd be looking at an inversion or a dark extreme of that idea.
Yeah, I could see.
Like, I could see perhaps to kind of like take it into a modern context.
Mm-hmm.
Could see perhaps a darker, corrupted, Florenius idea be the kind that is destructively hedonistic in a way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Partying at all hours, overdoing it in terms of...
That's what I was going to say.
Alcohol, drugs, you know, not in the way of like deadening you.
Just burning you out
the
fast.
Cocaine rush, yeah. The 27 Club, if yes. you know what that means, what that is. The rock stars who burn out and die young as a result of the pressures of fame.
Yeah, they're pushing themselves to the limit, not only daily, but weekly, but yearly, creatively.
Yeah.
And they're just, that energy and that motion is nonstop. They sleep for 2 to 3 hours a night, get up, do some more drugs to keep them going. So they have their uppers and their downers. And eventually those things just blur the edge. And so that would be taking Florenius to that next level up there.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
These aren't the only ones, but these are sort of what we're coming up with.
Yeah. Minbruge.
Oh, Minbruge is actually kind of easy, I think, in just the sense of justice without the temperament of wisdom or mercy.
Yeah.
To borrow a D&D term, like the lawful neutral, the idea of the law above all.
Yes.
Without the idea of the appropriate roles of individuals within society and the responsibilities that people have towards each other.
And there's no consideration for circumstance.
Yeah, no consideration for circumstance, no empathy. You can maybe get into a little bit of idea of Dis with its like senseless bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Aspect of things. But this would be more of a...
Almost a Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd, Rorschach from The Watchmen.
Yep.
Would be a dark Minbruge.
Mm-hmm.
That one feels kind of easy to pull.
Yeah. Then we have Yupandl.
Yupandl's a tough one.
Yeah. Building, construction, planning.
Building, construction, planning. Again, I think what you almost always end up with, as we found in most of these that we've discussed, is when either focus is taken away from name givers, from people and the effects that it has on people and the appropriate way to live in a society, or to take it to such an extreme that in a similar way, like the consequences on people are not taken into account. Silicon Valley tech bros.
Yeah.
Move fast and break stuff, like building stuff and innovating for the sake of innovating and not really giving any consideration to what that actually means in terms of what they are providing to society.
I could also go with planned obsolescence.
Yeah.
You intend for this to only work a couple of times and then it breaks.
There's a little bit in the Yupandl essay in the Questor's book.
Yeah.
That essay is kind of framed as a debate between two Questors of Yupandl, one of whom really does not like the idea of using Upandal's gifts to build siege weapons.
Yeah.
Or weapons of war. But the counter argument is by building these and building them well, we are actually saving people by ending these conflicts faster.
Yes.
Again, it's easier to pull it from modern day, like the technological development that happened so quickly from the beginning of World War II up to the end.
Yes.
Prop planes and then up through jets and rockets and the A-bomb.
Yes. You had to improve quickly.
Yeah. I could see that also being seen as something as a sort of dark up and all.
Yeah. The only other thing I can think of for him would be just random destruction. Since this is all about building and planning, this is the Joker view of the world. Just blow this up because I can.
Yeah, the inversion of that. Form over function, not caring whether it actually serves the purpose that it is being constructed for.
Yeah, go put lace on your bowling ball.
The various anti-homeless measures that are used in some cities to like prevent unhoused folks from
sleeping on
finding
a
comfortable place.
Yeah, things like that.
That's kind of the antithesis of what I would feel that Upendahl would be.
I agree.
Standing for. No, I think that covers all of them.
I flipped through the book. We got them all because the Mad Passions were already done. So we got the other nine. So we're good there. So hope that answers your question, Brendan. Good luck on your Earth Dawn adventure for your D&D group.
Yeah, let us know how it goes.
Bring them over to the light side.
That's now.
I did that just to get a rise out of Josh. Just to get one in there. Next up, we also hear from a different Chris. This is from Shady Dragon. Hey, Josh and Dan. Shady Dragon again. I came up with the concept of teamwork talent knacks in my own game and wanted to get Josh's opinion on them. Fine. Don't ask me. I don't have an opinion, so yes, Josh is better. In essence, two or more of your party have to possess the same talent knack and use them in the same round. As an example, a melee weapon talent, thread weaving talent knack was high and low. One party member would attack high on the target and the next would attack low on the target. If a wound was caused by either attack, the target would make a knockdown resistance check with a significant penalty due to the magic of the knack. Keep up the amazing work, Shady Dragon. That's a lot to take in.
That's an interesting idea. That feels like it plays a little bit in the space that some of the creature special abilities where like fewer numbers are required to harry a target,
mm-hmm.
or that they might provide bonuses to attacks that their allies are making against the same target. I don't have any particularly strong opinion against that particular knack. I still sort of feel that cooperation knacks or cooperation rules of some sort for tasks that multiple people can work on towards a single objective are something that maybe still could use a little bit of development. In the companion, there's the enchanting rules where you have like multiple enchanters working on the same project.
Yeah.
Getting assistance bonuses and like that. But there are other places where perhaps teamwork rules could apply.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I consider teamwork, you know, where I was talking about like multiple people helping towards the same goal, like you've got a big stone that is blocking the passage, but yeah. multiple people want to work together to move it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that in the rules? There's not really anything explicit about that. I do kind of like the idea of special knacks that are only useful if multiple people have them, like this high and low thing where they both have that ability. And so they kind of work together to have some kind of better outcome if they both succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know necessarily how effective this particular one is. I think it's a neat idea.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure how much design space there necessarily is that those could play in.
Fair.
It's an interesting idea and certainly plays into the concept that I think was being developed around the talents and abilities that adepts get and trying to provide synchronicity and helpfulness between different disciplines.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the distract talent, for example, makes it easier for the thief to use surprise strike because it applies that blindside bonus that then triggers their ability, you know, things like that. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. I'd say this could be, I like the idea of the teamwork aspect because certain disciplines are more lean themselves more toward the teamwork at Sky Raiders, Air Sailors, Cavalrymen, especially, to work in teams or in conjunction, at least in pairs. So I think that's not a bad idea either. And as long as I think you do, since it's such a limited set of circumstances that those could work in, I don't think it can be vastly abused.
Yeah.
Thought.
I likewise.
That's my two cents.
A quick sniff test. It's interesting, but I think broadly, I'm not sure how much design space there necessarily is for that or how broken something might end up being, but that's fine.
Fair. Yeah. No, I keep playtesting. If it works for you, great. If everyone's enjoying it, there you go. Last email, and it's the shortest question, but I think it'll give us the longest conversation if we do this one right. From Brendan. Hi, Dan. Hi, Josh. Can you guys talk a bit about the Grim Legion? Thanks. How long do you want us to go?
The Grim Legion is a loose affiliation of folks who are at least ostensibly dedicated to rooting out and defeating horrors and their spawn and their worshippers, like cultists and foul folk and things like that.
Yeah.
They don't really have any kind of large scale organization that I'm aware of. There are some individual folks, like there's one Haven, right, who's sort of the leader of the local members of the Grim Legion. But for the most part, the Grim Legion is sort of independent cells.
Yeah.
People call themselves members of the Grim Legion and operate in groups, but there isn't necessarily any kind of higher authority that they answer to. I get the sense, and I don't recall there being a whole lot of actual like exploration of them as an organization. We just have examples of folks who are part of the Grim Legion. The most obvious example are the antagonists in Infected.
Yeah.
But again, I know there's a group of them in Haven. I think there's a member of the Grim Legion that is either in Bartertown or Thrall.
Also rings a bell.
I think there may be, I don't remember specifics, there may be some members of the Grim Legion that are operating out of Trevar, probably to deal with or keep an eye on the Badlands.
Mm-hmm.
There may very well be some that are operating in the vicinity of Jarrus because of the Wastes. And I suspect, and this is where I'm just kind of starting to spin into speculation and off the top of my head world building, that what happened with the Grim Legion is that there may have been a single group of them that through various reasons, something happened and maybe individual members of that went off on their own and then like formed their own cells, their own units. They recruited other people and it kind of like spread out that way.
Yeah. Splintered a little bit.
Yeah. But because there is no, as far as I'm aware, overarching organization, there's no chapter house, there's no central authority that other Grim Legion operatives or units or however you want to divide them work under, each group can have its own modus operandi.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect there is not insignificant crossover between the Grim Legion and Horror Stalkers because they do kind of share common goals. And based on our conversation with Lou, it feels to me like the Grim Legion was not something that got a lot of development because it wasn't something that was a significant part of the stories that they were telling
yet
after like the initial kind of appearances of them.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't a whole lot of thought given to a larger structure or how they might have come to be. He did talk about the Scytha Mountains and the possible idea of like going and reclaiming that area. That's something that the Grim Legion may have been involved with. And I think in Living Room Games is in Barsabian Chaos, the Grim Legion was involved in a very similar sort of thing. That's my take on the Grim Legion. Different individuals can have different approaches or larger goals in terms of what they're doing. I mean, again, we'll probably talk about this in more depth when we talk about Infected, but the Grim Legion group in Infected has sort of two significant individuals that represent different objectives.
Yeah.
For the group, you've got one who is really like dedicated to the rooting out and defeating the horrors aspect of things. Mm-hmm. And then you've got another one who more likes the idea of using this power that the group provides to set himself up as a warlord / tin pot dictator.
Yeah.
So yeah, that may be what's going on there.
Fair. I don't even have 2 cents on the Grim Legion. I can't remember exactly where I came across them, but I think Josh is right. They're an infected. And yeah, I'm done.
I mean, I think they get mentioned in other places.
I can't remember where.
They get mentioned in the Parlength box. I'm pretty sure they get mentioned in Thrall, probably, I suspect, more in Barter Town than actual Thrall, but I could be mistaken on that. But yeah, I think they're kind of something that just shows up in a couple of places.
Yeah, they're like an ancillary antagonist, but not really a major mover or shaker.
And they can be in places where horror activity is likely and can provide another point of view or antagonist or rival or even ally faction.
Yeah.
Depending on your game and what kind of temperament and attitude that your PCs have towards Fair. That sort of thing.
Fair enough. Any final thoughts on anything we talked about here today? Anything we missed?
Nothing comes to mind. No.
Yeah, yeah. I think we got everybody's questions taken care of. So, folks, that is not enough for you. Please email us your questions at edsgpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, check out a GameCon for your legend.
Good night, everybody.